Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, our conversation will revisit the emerging markets as we will cover a range of topics within the asset class. Joining us today for these updates, glad to welcome back to Top of the Morning, emerging markets strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jingchen Yu. With that, Jingchen, thank you for once again spending some time with our listeners and their clients. Welcome back. Looking forward to our conversation today.
Good morning, Dan. Always a pleasure to be here with you in the studio.
Absolutely. So a lot to catch up on. Thinking back to the month of September, Jingchen, several important market events did take place. We did see the Fed pivot by having started with their easing cycle. China seemed to have become more determined in supporting the second largest economy in the world. So tell us a bit about what's been happening, especially how emerging market assets are positioned against a current global backdrop.
You're absolutely right, Dan. September was quite a crucial month for the global financial markets and therefore for emerging markets. First of all, the Federal Reserve cut, you know, their benchmark interest rate in September for the first time in 4 years, whereas the U.S. growth still remains resilient. On the other hand, China is attempting to reverse its economic downturn with a significant policy push. The Chinese Central Bank PBOC cut policy rates and mortgage rates and signal further easing ahead. They improved rules for mortgage refinancing, lower down payment thresholds for second homes, for instance, in attempt to support a housing market, as well as provide quite a bit of liquidity support for the equity markets. The Ministry of Finance also announced in October some positive forward guidance on fiscal policies, which will likely follow with greater details, the scope of which includes local government debt swaps, housing market destocking efforts, and also bank recapitalizations. China's policymakers emphasize several times already in recent weeks that the need for macroeconomic policy support to meet this year's 5%-ish real GDP growth target. These decisions really reflect a very strong determination from the Chinese policymakers to put a floor under the Chinese economy. So to sum up, we think indeed in improving global economic outlook as well as liquidity should benefit EM assets. That's the bottom line. With both Chinese policymakers and the Fed pushing to global financial conditions to a less restrictive stance in particular, but global geopolitical and political uncertainty has yet reached its peak with the U.S. election just less than 2 weeks away from today, which is a very important overhang, at least for the tactical outlook for emerging market risk assets.
Okay, so now that we have those expectations in mind, Jingchen, if we move over to specific asset classes within the emerging markets, maybe let's begin by covering equities. So what is the outlook for equities? And Jingchen, what would you identify as being the key opportunities to be mindful of at the moment?
Regarding emerging market stocks, it's very important to remember that future asset class performance is heavily dependent on what has been reflected in the price, right? Emerging market equities are currently trading around 12 times, you know, 12-month forward price to earnings ratio, so more or less in line with their historical averages, but at close to 45% of discount to U.S. stocks. While we are positive on U.S. equities, we think investors who are particularly under-allocated to other regions may still want to consider aligning with their strategic benchmarks. In the complex geopolitical world, exposure to markets with relatively lower correlation to typical U.S. holding is quite beneficial. The potential for U.S. dollar weakness looking ahead due to Fed cuts further supports the case for non-U.S. asset allocations, we find particularly attractive investment opportunities in the Asia-Pacific region broadly, especially including in Taiwan and India. So let me talk about a little bit more on these two important markets. First, for Taiwan, this is a market that is enjoying both stock-specific and structural transformational tailwinds. We like rising AI portions in the product mix of leading semiconductor stocks. Pricing power should help deliver gross margin surprises in 2025 and beyond. Now, for India, the structural growth markets, in my view, has become a little bit more tactically interesting now with the recent corrections. We think profit growth can hold up better than the region, especially beyond next year. As earnings growth continues to moderate from the very high fiscal year of 2024 pace, we think additional dips is likely in the process, but that can be taken care of by investors. South African stocks at the same time also appear tactically appealing. The improving domestic reforms momentum in particular, which will hopefully and likely help lift the still undemanding valuations then.
So that covers equities. Now, what about bonds, Xingchen?
Sure. Emerging market U.S. dollar-denominated bonds, for example, offer quite attractive interest rates of 6.5 to 7%. That is well above what currently U.S. high-yield bonds can offer. Even if the majority of EM issuers are rated investment grades, we expect EM bond spreads to remain stable, however, over the next 6 to 12 months, which is allowing investors to still achieve high single-digit returns. Importantly, EM bonds also provide broader diversification across countries, limiting exposure to countries amidst potential noisy U.S. tariff policy. We recently added new coverage to include countries such as Panama and the Dominican Republic among the best performing Latin American economies over the last two decades. Their bonds offer a peer interest rate carry amid high willingness ability to pay.
And then, Xingchen, before we close out, maybe in the way of a bonus question for our listeners and clients, timely, as you pointed out before, less than 2 weeks away from the U.S. election, what should investors keep in mind, especially as it relates to the emerging markets in the way of implications?
First of all, while the U.S. election outcome is undoubtedly important, I have to say long-term portfolio construction should remain apolitical. Emerging market assets should play a central role in portfolios, promoting geographic diversification and improved risk-adjusted returns. Tactically, however, we do think election outcome matters for emerging market assets in the short term. Under a Harris with split Congress scenario, we think the tailwind from loosening global financial conditions as well as resilient U.S. growth should help translate into positive returns for both bonds and equities. And for EM equities, we think low teens returns over the next 6 to 12 months, driven by mid-teens earnings growth, is very much likely. And not to mention, we still have a very favorable global backdrop, as I mentioned before. These will be led specifically by key Asian markets such as Taiwan and India, as discussed before. The USD-denominated EM bonds should offer high single-digit returns over the next 6 to 12 months, although spreads would likely trade sideways. Now, more uncertainty will arise in case Trump wins with a unified Republican Congress, what we call it a red sweep. In such a scenario, for equities in particular, I think tariffs risk would be the key to gauge the level of volatility. countries heavily exposed to U.S. exports, particularly mainland China and Mexico, are particularly exposed to Trump's threat of significantly higher tariffs. Foreign investment flows into EM may also be negatively impacted. That said, we don't think a full-blown trade war 2.0 is an assumed base case scenario, even if Trump wins. So we still think low single-digit returns still can be achieved over the next 6 to 12 months for emerging market stocks. That is going to be supported by healthy corporate fundamentals and also in absence of a major tariff shock. As for bonds, in this scenario, uncertainty around U.S. foreign and trade policy could lead to short-term volatility in the asset class. However, EM bonds, as I argued before, still provide broad diversification benefits across countries, in a way limiting exposure to any of the negative shocks, including unexpected tariff policy. The asset class returns to continue to be driven by a very appealing interest rate carry. For more information, please keep an eye on our incoming monthly investing emerging markets publication.
Well, Jing Chen, as always, do appreciate your time and insight. Thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning today to keep our listeners and our clients informed on a range of developments within the emerging markets and sharing some guidance when it comes to positioning across asset classes within. As Jing Chen alluded to, for our listeners and clients, the Investing in Emerging Markets flagship monthly report from the team found on ubs.com/CIO. Again, that's ubs.com/CIO. Though, Jing Chen, thank you as always. Nice speaking with you today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.